All right, well, hello everyone. Happy Monday. I want to start by telling you I'm a little bit in mourning right now. I just found out, I think it was about an hour ago, that a friend of mine passed away the other day. His brother wrote to me and told me today, so so that's where I'm at right now. And what I would like to do is play a song. I've liked playing songs to get started in the teaching anyway, but this is a song that I'd like to dedicate to my friend Sam, who passed away. I don't feel like I actually picked out the song, to be honest. I kind of asked for a song, and this one is the one that came to mind. And then after it came to mind, I thought, oh, how perfect, because, you know, at the level of form, Sam's difficulty was he had heart issues. He had an extremely severe heart attack a few years ago that left him in the hospital for, gosh, like 6 months. And then when he got out, he was so weak. He lived up in Massachusetts. And one time when I was at Quincy, he came there to see me. Because he wanted to see me. But he was so sick. The fact that he came was really touching. Now, it was surprising to see how sick he was, and yet that he'd made the effort to come to the gathering. But he was only able to stay for a couple of hours because he really shouldn't have been up and out. And we've written to each other, you know, when he could write. He couldn't even always do email, really, because he was so weak. But in the last year or so, he seemed to be getting a lot better, and he was so happy. You know, he would write and say, oh, you know, I can do this now, and I can do this now. You know, I think it's maybe just a really exciting after you lose the ability to do just about anything, when your health starts to return, and you start to be able to do even simple things that most of us take for granted. There's such a joy in being able to do that. But he was still sick, even though he appeared to be getting better, and everyone knew that he was sick. And the last time that I talked to him, he was really happy because he thought he had a chance at getting on a list of people for heart transplants. So he wasn't even on the list, and I don't know what's involved in getting on the list, how you qualify, but apparently he was really feeling that he would qualify, and he was very happy about that. But instead, the way it turned out is that he passed away August 21st in his sleep, which I always perceive as a blessing. When Mary Ellen was here just 3 weeks before her death, she and I actually had an interesting discussion about how we wanted to die, and I remember telling her that I would like just pass away in my sleep. So I'm grateful that Sam had the gift, that gift. Anyway, so when I asked for a song, this song came to mind, and at first I didn't even recognize how perfect it was, but the name of the song is Heart to Heart. And so since, you know, heart is kind of the issue that he had in form, and then obviously I have a very strong heart connection with Sam. I did from the time I met him. It just seems like a perfect tune. So it's Resta. So why don't we listen to Heart to Heart.
Heart to heart, I love to be heart to heart, to learn we've not gone apart, that we are still one. Heart to heart, sharing truth, heart to heart, igniting the holy sparks, that's the light of God's sun. Thank you. joyous and gentle way. I'm remembering where Christ, heart to heart, join with me, heart to heart, to laugh at the guilty dark.
That's a perfect song for the circumstance, don't you think? So, we'll see what happens as I continue teaching. Maybe this will pass. Maybe they'll be crying during the teaching. Right now there's a stopped up nose. Maybe I sound a little funny. We'll just see what happens. But why don't we go ahead and just take a moment of silence. Amen. All right. So you don't mind listening to me with a stopped up nose. Good. Good friends that will sit with you no matter, what you sound like. All right. Lots of sniffing going on, but we're going to begin with number 307. We did through 306 last night. So I'm posting a link in the room now. If anyone happens to be listening on the radio, you can go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not a spelled out word, RDA7 stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to RDA7 stepsjournal.wordpress.com, you will find a menu bar at the top that has step 1, step 2, step 3. We're in step 2 right now. So you can just click on step 2 and then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 307. And that's where we're going to begin today. In the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, number 307 is within the portion of step 2 that is the quotes of Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is what number 307 says in the book. There is no body, nor a world to contain it. There is only a mental condition, a dreamlike state, easy to dispel by questioning its reality. Again, there is no body, nor a world to contain it. there is only a mental condition, a dreamlike state, easy to dispel by questioning its reality. Let's look at the journal. Number 307. Everything perceived is not real. No body, no world, no family, no friends. Everything perceived is not real. Rest with this idea. Soften into it. Focus on isness. Question apparent reality. Keep the teachings of this journal in mind. So last night, one of the things we talked about is how the teaching that the world is not real is not a teaching for the head, that the head misuses the teaching. In fact, one of the examples that I think I may have used last night was mourning, not knowing that today I would be, you know, in mourning. you know, we hear people, I mean, this is a common, you know, Course in Miracles student story, you know. This is, you know, we hear about, you know, when someone dies and someone is in mourning, how the foolish Course student will say, oh, it's just an illusion. That's kind of how the head misuses the teaching. And I mentioned last night that Muji, I believe, had said that the teaching that the world is not real is not a good teaching. But he said something also like the realization of it, of the world is not real, however, is wonderful. And what he really seems to be describing in that quote is, you know, the head, when the head gets a hold of the idea, you know, I like to call it the educated spiritual ego, gets a hold of the idea that the world is not real, it's just, it's very, very, it tries to disassociate from experience in an unhealthy way. But the heart is so different from the head. The heart is able to not, the heart doesn't really take the teaching, to be honest, because the heart already knows. It's more like the teaching turns our attention to the heart, which already knows this. But the heart is able to take the realization of the world is not real and yet embrace experience with that knowledge present. There's a present knowledge that the experience is temporary. You know, probably the best example in the world that all of us can identify with is like going to a movie. You know, we go to a movie, we are able to embrace the experience of the movie. We don't have to disassociate from the experience. So, you know, like yesterday, I cried yesterday too. Because yesterday I went to see The Odd Life of Timothy Green, and it was a very touching movie for me. From the beginning to the end, almost, I cried, but it was coming from that being touched, you know, feeling. But, you know, we go to movies and we cry with them, we laugh with them. If it's scary, we get scared with them. We don't feel like we have to disassociate from the movie. We don't have to deny that experience of the movie. And yet, there's a knowing that it's not real. And this knowing that it's not real, well, it keeps us from having to become involved with the movie in an insane way. That's what it does. You know, like an insane way of getting involved with the movie would be, you know, when something's happening on the screen, running up and trying to, you know, grab the screen and rip this character away from that character. You know, we'd be getting involved in the movie in an insane way. We can still have the experience, but we don't have to be afraid of the experience. We don't have to disassociate from the experience, but we also do not have to get involved in an insane way because we have the knowledge that it's not real. And that's kind of what the heart does with this experience of a lifetime in a world. The heart, it doesn't ask us to deny the experience. It doesn't ask us to disassociate from the experience in an unhealthy way. But there's this, at least for me, the way I experience it now, this, I'm going to call it this still knowing. That it is just an experience. That it's not touching the reality of anything. So when we look at number 307, it says, everything perceived is not real. It states a fact. And then, to be very clear in this fact, it mentions the things that we are most likely most attached to. No body. No world. No family. No friends. Everything perceived is not real. So it's pretty direct with the truth. But then what it says is, it says rest with this idea. Why does it say rest with this idea? Because it doesn't want us taking the idea to the head. If we think about this idea, we take the idea to the head. Instead, rest with this idea. Soften into it. Focus on isness, beingness, here-ness, whatever word works for you. Question apparent reality. And again, as we go forward in step two in this journal, you're going to see a lot of questioning of apparent reality happening. So you'll get fine examples of what that looks like. And then keep the teachings of this journal in mind. Again, that's specifically for me. So it's interesting because it presents what, you know, to me was once the most dramatic teaching of all. I mean, just, you know, bizarre that everything perceived is not real. How can you, in fact, it's funny, at church yesterday, we were talking to a woman who was a guest at the church. She's not a member. And I don't remember how we got into it in the conversation, because we were really having a very casual conversation. But, you know, somehow it came up that the world is an illusion. I don't remember how it even came up. It was a very casual, nonchalant way. And she's like, really? And I said, I think it was actually someone else who mentioned that. And I said, well, I said, that is an ancient teaching. And she said, well, then it has us fooled. I think for her, this was maybe the first time she'd heard this. But she was so cool in the way she responded. Well, then it has us fooled. And she was right. You know, it's such a dramatic teaching if you have not yet heard it. I mean, that's just like the, you know, her reaction was perfect. Really? It's such a dramatic teaching compared to our experience, because it has us fooled. So we don't want to go with a head belief. Going with a head belief that the world is not real, you know, just isn't what we want to do with it. Instead, we want to rest with this idea. We want to give our willingness to this idea, soften into this idea, focus on isness that is currently present, question apparent reality, right? And then keep the teachings of our inner guide in mind. This is what we want to do with the idea, instead of taking this dramatic teaching and sticking it in the head and then letting the head react in a very foolish way with it. So we're softening into it, kind of like a warm bath. Why don't we go ahead and scroll down and click on number 308, which is underneath the comment and reply, and I will post a link in the room as well. And I will read from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, number 308. I am trying to wake you up, whatever your dream. I am trying to wake you up, whatever your dream. All right, let's look and see the journal, what this says. Again, everything perceived is not real. Rest with this teaching. Soften into it. Focus on isness. Keep the teachings of this journal in mind. So it's a very, very dramatic teaching. Really? Right? It's a very, very dramatic teaching. And yet, the teaching is given to wake us up. It's given because it's true. But it's so dramatic, so different than our experience, so different than what we're taught to believe from the time we're born, that we can't really expect to read it and get it. And so, you know, when the teacher says, I'm trying to wake you up, what the teacher is saying, this is extremely dramatic, I realize, but I need to give you the truth. Because I won't wake you up by continuing to tell you your dreams are true. That's not helpful. I'm trying to wake you up. Everything that you perceive is not real. You are in a dream. I know that's very, very hard for you to believe. I know that everything that you experience seems incredibly real. I know that you suffer from your experience. I know that you love your experience. I know that you are extremely attached to your experience. But it's not real. I'm trying to wake you up. You are dreaming. This is the truth. Now rest with this teaching. Soften into it. Focus on isness, because that is real. Everything else that you think you know is not, but that is. So focus on that. And keep all of the teachings that I give you in mind. And the I, of course, in that sentence is the inner teacher. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 309. Number 309, it is by your consent that the world exists. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj speaking. It is by your consent that the world exists. Withdraw your belief in its reality and it will dissolve like a dream. So the last couple of quotes have been telling us it's a dream. It's a dream. It's not real. It's a dream. And now comes something, you could say, helpful in the sense that sometimes what we want is, what can I do? If it's not true, what can I do? What can I do to release the appearance of it? You know, what can I do? At least that's the way I've always been. You know, what can I do? And here Sri Nisargadatta tells us what we can do. He says, it is by your consent that the world exists. Withdraw your belief in its reality, and it will dissolve like a dream. Well, that kind of even makes the previous two journal entries a little more clear, because as we rest into the teaching that this world is not real, as we rest into it, at least in my experience, what starts to happen is at moments when before I would have been very involved with whatever is happening, the teaching rises up itself, the world is not real. And the involvement then is at least not as mentally attached. It's, you know, sometimes actions are the same. But while the actions are happening, there's a detachment, not the unhealthy head detachment, you know, that's really trying to deny the experience, but a healthy heart detachment. And the healthy heart detachment, again, does not deny the experience, but there's just this realization that it's not true, that nothing is affected, that it's all right, all is well. All is well is a perfect way to describe the realization. All is well. And if we're believing that all is well, even as the hands seem to be working to solve a problem, well, we're not putting belief in the problem. There's a difference between putting belief in a problem and realizing that all is well, even as you make a phone call that you now need to make because of the situation that has appeared. You know, some people, I think that both can't be true. You can't be actively working, you know, taking steps that appear to need to be taken because something happened and be detached at the same time. But there are many people that certainly know that that's not true. You can be. You know, Jesus called it being in the world but not of the world. You know, something can rise up and then, well, that means I have to make this phone call and that means I have to do this and that means I have to do that. And, you know, the body still goes through all the same actions that it might have gone through even if the mind was totally involved in thinking something's wrong that has to be fixed. But instead, while the body's going through the actions, somehow there's a knowing in the heart, all is well. All is well. So the belief in the world is not there in the way that it was before. It is somehow just a play. And it's being played, but it's just a play. All right, let's look at the journal number 309. Again, first Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "It is by your consent that the world exists. Withdraw your belief in its reality, and it will dissolve like a dream." Number 309. What am I? Here we go into some of the early questioning that occurs in this step. What am I? Am I this body, this woman, in a world that is bigger and more influential than me? Or am I the dreamer of the world and this body, both of which are dream? Is it possible that I am that which is beyond both the world and the dreamer of the world? How can I know or discover the truth of what I am? It seems that if I play the part of the body, the woman in the world, my experience will remain as the woman. This does not feel most helpful if I want to experience full discovery of what I am. It seems that if I play dreamer of the world, watching thoughts and manipulating the dream through thought, I will move from the perception I am the body, but I will not discover if I am that which is beyond the dreamer and the world. It seems the most helpful practice is to lose interest in the world and thoughts about the world while focusing on present isness. Intuition says this is the most helpful practice if the goal is to discover the full truth of what I am. And so this is the practice I choose. So, let's go through this a little more slowly. First,
What am I?
Three choices were presented. Am I this body, this woman? You know, we call her Regina. Am I Regina? In a world that's bigger, more influential than me? Or am I, as A Course in Miracles appears to say, at least in some parts, the dreamer of the dream? Is that what I am? Or is it possible that what I am is actually beyond both the world and the dreamer? It's interesting because the other day Cheryl Valentine shared something with me that is right on with what this is pointing to. She said that at one time, you know, if you use the analogy of the movie in a movie theater, at one time, of course, she thought she was the actor on the screen. And, you know, everything that was happening to the actor was happening to her. And she said then later she moved to think that she was the projector. She was the one projecting the movie on the screen. She says now she sees that she's the screen. And that's exactly what this is pointing to. Am I the body? Am I the mind that projects the world? Or am I even before that? And certainly many of us, we learned, you know, from teachings like A Course in Miracles, that we were the mind that projected the world. And at some point, you know, realization of this has to occur, but that's actually not the final realization. Because we're actually even before that. We're not the projector of the movie, we are the screen. And it doesn't matter whether a movie's being played out or whether a movie's not, we are the same, untouched. When 309 was being written, this is when I was having that realization for the first time. Up until this day, March 13th, 2012, I probably would have, thinking that I was spiritually educated, said that I am the dreamer of the dream. But as this clarity was coming and number 309 was being written, I saw, no, that's not even true. That's only what we would call relatively true. It's an experience. But it's not true. What we are is the untouched, unchanged. So this realization came, just like it came to Cheryl, this realization came. And then the second three paragraphs were written. The first paragraph saying, okay, well, it's not helpful then to go on fully being Regina, right? Being totally caught up in Regina's desires and Regina's fears and Regina's worries. And, you know, it's just not helpful to be that. Because if I remain at the level of believing her thoughts, then my experience will remain as her. I will not transcend her by fully being her. So what if I take it up a level? What if I start to realize I'm the dreamer of the dream? What if I become a master of manipulating the dream? And there are people who practice this level, and there are people who become very skilled at this level. In India, you can hear a lot about teachers who can manifest, you know, fruit or flowers or whatever out of thin air. Not magic tricks. Manifesting. But as I asked, you know, as I looked at that, I saw, but if I do that, I still stay, there's still an attachment to the dream. Still, the dream is very important. The dream is still the focus. And there's nothing in that, there's nothing in becoming the master dreamer that takes me beyond the dream. So what is the most helpful practice then? If this clarity that I've just received, that I'm not the film, I'm not the projector, I'm the screen, if this is true, what is going to help me to become consistent in that realization? And the answer was just to focus on, again, present isness. That which is most like a screen in our experience. If you look at the world and the story of your life, you can see that the body changes. You can see that emotions change. 30 minutes ago, I was crying. Now I'm not. Right? The story around us changes. But no matter whether I'm crying or not, there's something that is the same, something that is not changed, something that is not touched. What was there when I was crying 30 minutes ago that is still here now that I'm not at all crying? Some people call it awareness. I'm not actually fond of the word awareness, and I'll tell you why, because I think that the word awareness, for me anyway, can still be deceiving, because the word awareness seems to, for a lot of people, and it did for me, the word awareness focuses us on conscious awareness, which is only here when we're awake. And by awake, I mean, not sleeping in our beds. And then when we're asleep, conscious awareness doesn't appear to be present. But isness is still present. Beingness is still present, even before conscious awareness, even without conscious awareness. It's always here. So the word isness to me is if we're going to put a descriptor on it, it's a better descriptor. And the isness is completely untouched. It's untouched whether I'm crying or whether I'm laughing, whether I'm asleep in bed or whether I'm, awake, moving about in the world. And so if I just learn to focus mind attention on the presence of isness, even though you can't see it like an object, if I just learn to focus mind attention on the presence of isness, that's the practice that moves me both beyond the woman and beyond the dreamer, because it's before both. And so, as it says here, intuition says this is the most helpful practice if the goal is to discover the full truth of what I am. And so this is the practice I choose. I choose to follow intuition. The intuition I was feeling when this was being written. So it's no use to me to spend time in India studying under a master, learning how to manipulate the dream as the dreamer. That has no use for me, because that would only take me so far. It's a step I can skip. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 310. And I will read in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Cease from looking for happiness and reality in a dream, and you will wake up. So now he's telling us something else we can do. Before, he was asking us to withdraw our belief. And the practice in the journal that was given for withdrawing the belief was to continually focus on isness. Right? Just keep noticing it's always here. I'm always ising. is always ising, right? No matter what. Now, he says, cease from looking for happiness and reality in a dream, and you will wake up. Let's look at the journal, number 310. The decision is made and confirmed by the heart. Although the world, the role of woman, and thoughts continue, I will lose interest in them and focus on continuous isness. This is the practice that goes beyond what I am not and reveals what I am. Now, the interesting thing about the practice of focusing on isness, well, one nice thing about it is that you can carry it with you wherever you go. You don't even need a pocket. You can be completely naked and focus on isness. You don't need a pocket. You don't need a purse. You don't have to carry something with you, right? You can also do it anytime, anywhere, no matter who you're with, no matter what you're doing. You can focus on isness while you're mourning the death of a friend. You can focus on isness while you're laughing, having a day in the sun with a group of friends. It's always there. But also, something else, at least in my experience, begins to happen the more and more that you focus on isness. Is that you become happy just with isness. You don't need anything but isness to be happy. And it's always there, which means you can always be happy. Even, you know, while mourning the loss of a friend. There's mourning there. But that doesn't mean the happiness is lost, because, you know, when happiness is lost in mourning, it takes on a tone of desperation or victimization or anger, right? Something else happens to it. What I was noticing, you know, I probably, you know, I mean, I only knew like an hour before I come on here, so I probably cried for about an hour. And some of the crying is what you would call, you know, kind of hard. It's hard, kind of hard crying. But what I noticed about the morning, and actually I loved this, I appreciated this. What I noticed about the mourning is that it was an emotion that would have its time. It's just like, this is what we're going to do now. I'm going to have my time. We may have had this planned or that planned, but this is what we're going to do now. And it just was. It just was. And I was happy to let it be. I didn't want to say, no mourning, you're not supposed to be here. No mourning, I don't want to cry. No mourning, I want it to be different. I was happy to let the mourning be. So something happens as we focus on isness, where we can allow different experiences to be present, and we don't actually go up in happiness or down in happiness, depending on the experience. Our happiness level, our appreciation for isness level, remains constant even as the experiences change. So we're not looking for happiness in the dream. We've got the happiness right here in our invisible pocket. And we don't need to avoid certain types of experiences in order to have the happiness, because the happiness is here right through that experience. The happiness even appreciates that experience for what it is. So, Srinivasagadatta Maharaj said, cease from looking for happiness and reality in a dream and you will wake up. The journal entry says, the decision is made and confirmed by the heart. Although the world, the role of woman, and thoughts continue, right? Everything's still going here for me. There is no awakening here. You know, I define awakening as no self, no world. That's not my experience. So although the world, the role of woman, and thoughts continue, I will lose interest in them and focus on continuous isness. This is the practice that goes beyond what I am and reveals what I am. All right, so we can scroll down and click on number 311. Okay, this is a little longer. Here is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. The world cannot give what it does not have. Unreal to the core, it is of no use for real happiness. It cannot be otherwise. We seek the real because we are unhappy with the unreal. Happiness is our real nature, and we shall never rest until we find it. But rarely we know where to seek it. Once you have understood that the world is but a mistaken view of reality and is not what it appears to be, you are free of its obsessions. Only what is compatible with your real being can make you happy, and the world, as you perceive it, is its outright denial. So that's interesting, because what we are is, you know, isness. What we are is. I'm not stuck on that word. That's the word I feel is the best descriptor. What we are is. And if you look at the world, you can see how it's the outright denial of that. First of all, when I look at the world does not say that what I am is. The world says what I am is this body, Regina, this girl, or woman, I guess. I'm 52, but I still think of myself as a girl. I wrote to someone this morning who, you know, I'm getting to know a little bit through email, and I said to him, I'm a 52-year-old woman. And when I was proofreading that, I was like, geez, that's weird. How did that happen? I'm a girl. I'm just a little girl. But I'm not. That's what the world says. I'm a girl, or I'm a 52-year-old woman, right? Not. I'm is. The world says I'm this thing and not that thing, not that stapler, right? I'm a separate object from other things, from other people. And the world says that even is, even life, has an end. You know, if you look at the world, you know, like my friend Sam, my friend Mary Ellen, and, you know, many other of our friends, right? We've lost a lot of friends in the last few years from this community we call the Course Community. And the world says, you know, is doesn't even continue ising. At some point, it's is not. So the world is the absolute denial of what we are. Everything about the world teaches the opposite of truth. So let me just read Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj one more time. The world cannot give what it does not have. Unreal to the core, it is of no use for real happiness. It cannot be otherwise. We seek the real because we are unhappy with the unreal. Happiness is our real nature, and we shall never rest until we find it. But rarely we know where to seek it. Once you have understood that the world is but a mistaken view of reality and is not what it appears to be, you are free of its obsessions. Only what is compatible with your real being can make you happy. And the world, as you perceive it, is its outright denial. I was reading a few articles this week, and one of the articles, I don't remember which one, so I don't remember who said it, but one of the articles said that the realization that happiness cannot come from the world is a prerequisite to awakening. And you can see how that's true, because As long as I'm still thinking happiness can come from the world, I'm still attached, and I'm not going to accept awakening, which is no world, right? So the acceptance of the fact that happiness can never come from the world is a prerequisite for awakening. All right, let's look at the journal, number 311. To play the game of woman in the world is to deny the reality of what I am. Supreme joy cannot come from the denial of what I am. Supreme joy can only come from realization of what I am and the choice to be that fully. One cannot be that and be woman also. Therefore, I deny the idea that I am woman. I relax into the isness that I am. So this is what I would call a soft inner practice. It doesn't affect the way I act at all. I'm still in form, the same mother I was 9 months ago. But what happens in the mind is something that I call remembrance. What happens in the mind is that even as I am acting, there's this very quiet, wordless remembrance that I am not woman, that Jasmine is not girl, that Jamie is not dog, that snake is not snake, that tree is not tree. It just kind of happens in the quiet, quiet background, not even as thoughts, as a wordless remembering. It's very soft. But it seems like it's helpful that it's happening. It seems like it's helpful that it's there. Number 311, to play the game of woman in the world is to deny the reality of what I am. Supreme joy cannot come from the denial of what I am. Supreme joy can only come from realization of what I am and the choice to be that fully. One cannot be that and be woman also. Therefore, I deny the idea that I am woman. I relax into the isness that I am. And then there's a note. Denying I am woman also means denying her desires, her ideas and opinions, and her fears as mine. I stop playing the role of woman now. So the way this plays out is somebody makes a statement. You know, somebody says, because of this particular issue, I have now decided to vote for Mitt Romney. And when someone says something, I see a thought in my mind. The thought could be, oh no, Barack Obama is much better. Or the thought could be, tell me, you know, more about that issue. I want to make a decision about how I feel on that issue. I'm not certain of my opinion, my stand. Tell me more so I can pick a stand. Right? Either one of those or any of the other options that could have arisen are being the woman. When I want to know how I think, when I want to have an opinion, I am being Regina. There's a journal entry that was made yesterday. Let me find it. It's right here. This is actually number 572. But it says, who am I? Am I one with this opinion or one with that opinion? Where do I stand? Stand between the two, in no opinion. Realize the pull to take a stand is ego. Then stand empty. You see, it doesn't matter which stand I take. It doesn't matter where I am on this political issue. Whichever stand I take, wherever I am, is reinforcing that I am the character in the dream. I stand empty. That's my place to stand. The practice of this came when some of my friends began to have some, well, they didn't really begin, they'd had them for a while, but they were having some serious disagreements among each other, and they all wanted to speak to me. So it was funny because all of the parties involved were speaking to me. And you could just see the mind wanting to pick an opinion, who was right and who was wrong and what should they do. And I chose to use that situation to stay in no opinion. To not form any opinions about who was right and who was wrong and what should have been done and what should not have been done. I let them tell me their stories, and they told me their stories in great detail. And I stood in no opinion. Because as soon as I grabbed onto an opinion, I became woman again. I stood empty. And I still practice this. This is not something I could say that I'm 100% at, I'm sure. So whenever I notice the pull to form an opinion, I try to stand empty. And if I do state an opinion, what often happens now is I'll state it and then I'll unstate it. I'll say, never mind, forget what I said. Never mind. I take it back. I unstate it. Desires are another one, you know, that has to be watched. Like, you know, there's a town here in Colorado that, it calls to me. I love it. It's Buena Vista. We went there the first weekend in August to visit and took Danielle, and Danielle loved it too. And, you know, we're always jokingly saying that we're going to get a cabin in Buena Vista one day. We'll have a weekend cabin, a summer cabin in Buena Vista because we love it. But the truth is, even while I'm saying that, there's something in me that's realizing I need to step away from this desire. There are no desires in emptiness. By being the one who loves Buena Vista, literally, I'm being the woman. Now, I don't feel any sacrifice in that. I know some people, when they talk about stepping away from their desires, they feel sacrifice. I don't. And I suppose the reason I don't feel sacrifice in that is because I do know that I don't actually need Buena Vista. It doesn't matter if Buena Vista ever happens. It's the isness, which can't be taken away, that happiness comes from. So I don't feel a sacrifice in being reminded to step away from desires. I know that behind every desire satisfied, there just lies another desire. You know, if we got a cabin in Buena Vista, then we would just want something else. And that's the course's seek and do not find. So I personally do not feel a sacrifice in being asked to let go of my desires and being reminded, oh, you're being attached again. You know, gently back off from that. I'm actually grateful for those inner reminders. Because I can't be the woman. Okay, Lynn is telling me that first I have to learn to pronounce the name correctly, because of course every state has their own way of saying things. So apparently, Buena Vista, is that how you say it? Beulah. Buena Vista. I think I've got it. Buena Vista. Oh, instead of Buena Vista. Buena Vista. That's funny. Yeah. And it is lovely there. And you know, and I may go there some more and play. I don't know. But the point is, when it's a true desire, there's an attachment to it, to where if I get to go there and play, and I'm happy. If I don't get to go there and play, I'm not happy somehow. When it's not a true desire, you know, and I'm not attached to it, then I may still go there, but I'm just as happy if I don't. It's just whatever, however this story plays out is okay. I don't have any attachments to wanting it to play out a certain way in order for me to be happy. I don't have to avoid Buena Vista, or however you say it. I don't have to avoid that place. If it's natural to come there, then I will go there. If it's not natural, then I won't, and the happiness is the same either way. Beulah. Buena Vista. I may have to always say Beulah first, but even Beulah, I mean, look at it. How you spell it and how you say it makes no sense. All right, so number 311. To play the game of woman in the world is to deny the reality of what I am. This is an important fact. Can't be both. To play the game of woman in the world is to deny the reality of what I am. Supreme joy cannot come from the denial of what I am. Supreme joy can only come from realization of what I am and the choice to be that fully. One cannot be that and be woman also. Therefore, I deny the idea that I am woman. I relax into the isness that I am. Denying I am woman also means denying her desires, her ideas and opinions, and her fears as mine. I stop playing the role of woman now. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 312. All right, so Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Do understand that what you think to be the world is your own mind. Do understand that what you think to be the world is your own mind." So now he's talking to the level of projector, which is a level that we also have to accept. Even though we're going to go beyond it, we can't go beyond it while still looking at it, the world, and denying responsibility by saying, you know, she's the one that did that. She's the guilty one. You know, we can't. It's kind of like we go from person, take the responsibility like projector, then realize we're the screen, just as Cheryl described. So do understand that what you think to be the world is your own mind. Let's look at the journal. Number 312. What am I? A woman in a world that is more influential than me? The dreamer of the world? Or that which is beyond both world and dreamer? By focusing on isness instead of the world or thoughts about the world, I choose to accept that which is beyond as my reality. So it's kind of like saying, you're responsible for the daydream. It's true. on the one hand. But on the other hand, the daydream is nothing. So there's nothing to be responsible for. But if you're so caught up in the daydream that you think it's real, the first thing you have to learn is it's not real, you're making it up. And then, at least in my experience, the next thing you learn is it doesn't even exist. For me, although the words sound very similar, it's not real and it doesn't exist. For me, that's two different, in learning, that's two different levels. Like, I was willing to get to the it's not real first before I could get to the it doesn't exist. That was even a bigger stretch. When I was in the phase of learning that I call it's not real, or the phase of learning that is, you know, I'm the dreamer of the dream. Although this doesn't make sense to me now, so things that don't make sense to me now are kind of hard to say, but it made sense to me then. Although it wasn't real, I'm the dreamer of the dream, somehow it still existed for me, if that makes any sense. It does not exist at all is a newer clarity that came later. And in fact, it came during this journaling of step two, and we'll see that as it comes up. We'll see how the clarity that it does not exist at all finally arrived, how I moved from the it's not real to the it does not exist. And maybe other people didn't need to move through those same stages, so maybe what I'm saying doesn't even make sense, but this is the way it was for me. But what happened for me when I was coming to the step two is that I was ready to start making that shift. And so in number 312, the focus of my inner teacher stayed with, instead of going back to the dreamer level, which I had actually been at a number of years thanks to my work with A Course in Miracles and NTI, instead of staying at that dreamer level, which Nisargadatta is talking about here, my inner guidance continued to take the journal entry and start to push my eyes beyond that. So instead of looking at my thoughts and saying, oh, I don't know. Let me think of a good example. Instead of looking at my thoughts and realizing that the appearance of someone attacking me is only out there because I believe in attack, which is a level of practice I was at for a number of years, and I learned to let go of things like the belief in attack and the belief in rejection and betrayal. But instead of staying at that level of, I only see that because it's in my mind, what this is moving me to is both what I see and what I think are meaningless. They don't deserve any attention at all. And in fact, it's funny because for me that's what I want to call it a more advanced stage. Yet when you open A Course in Miracles and you look at the workbook, it's the very first few lessons. What I see means nothing. What I think means nothing. But even though they're the first lessons, the basics, somehow they came to me as the more advanced step. First, I went through the step of letting go of specific thoughts, specific beliefs. And then the realization came, both what I see and what I think are meaningless. And so at that level, there are no longer corrections to make in the mind. It's beyond the level of correcting the mind. It's the level of seeing that the mind is completely meaningless. And like I said, for me, that was a more advanced phase. So what am I? a woman in the world that is more influential than me, the dreamer of the world, or that which is beyond both world and dreamer. By focusing on isness instead of the world or thoughts about the world, I choose to accept that which is beyond my reality. Focusing on isness by seeing both the world and the thoughts as meaningless, not real, not important. And again, this doesn't get in the way of action. It allows a happy, detached action. Probably if this teaching was taken to the head, it would be very complicated. How do I live in the world and see it as meaningless too? That's at the head level. The heart knows the answer to that. The heart, just do this, do this, do this, without the mental involvement in what's being done. Okay, let's scroll down and click on number 313. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, "Once you have seen that you are dreaming, you shall wake up. But you do not see, because you want the dream to continue. A day will come when you will long for the ending of the dream with all your heart and mind, and be willing to pay any price. The price will be disfashion and detachment, the loss of interest in the dream itself." So this goes with what Regis has typed, that which I see is meaningless and doesn't deserve any attention at all. What he's saying here, and for me he's absolutely correct, is you're not completely there yet. You are learning that phase, but you're not completely there yet. If you were, you'd wake up. I had an interesting realization about that yesterday. Somebody wrote in Facebook, "Do you think the world should really end in 2012? And without even thinking about it, what I saw come out of me was, "No." And then I realized, well, apparently I'm not ready to let go of the world then. Here I am saying, no, it should not end in 2012. Well, that kind of shows me where I stand, doesn't it? It kind of shows me where I stand, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. So what? I'm in the process of learning detachment, learning dispassion, not completely there. I'm okay with that. One thing that I'm really not at all in favor of is denial or pretending. You know, pretending to myself to be more detached than I am. There is significant detachment. I know that. I see it all of the time. But 100% detachment, apparently not, because I don't want the world to end in 2012. Not only that, I made a post last week about how I had this dream that somebody was strangling me and I couldn't get air. And I said, salvation to me in that moment meant air. Now, it's funny because some of the people that wrote on the post were saying things like, well, that's okay that you want air. Well, sure, it's okay that I want air. I agree. It's okay that I want air. You know, it's okay that I don't want the world to end in 2012, but what it says to me, my point was, what it says to me is I am not completely detached from this experience. And you know, one thing the ego would like us to do as we start to make, you know, some true spiritual progress, and I do mean true spiritual progress. The spiritual progress is honest, but what ego would love us to do is to take the true spiritual progress we've made and then exaggerate it in our own mind. You know, make statements to ourselves and others, but most importantly, ego wants us to make the statement to ourselves, I am completely detached. Nothing in the world has meaning to me anymore. Because if I can lie to myself like that, then ego can stay hidden, and it can keep right on being or seeming to be anyway. That attachment continues to exist. So to me, one of the most important qualities that we need on this path, if we really do want awakening, and remember, we don't even know what the hell awakening is. One of the most important qualities we need on this path is self-honesty. I think it's wonderful to recognize the progress, and I don't know how you can help but recognize the progress. You can't help but see how, you know, you would have been angry before, and now you're not. This would have really scared you before, and now it doesn't. This would have completely upset you, blown your world upside down before, and now you're just handling it. You can't help but notice these things. But vanity wants to fill the vacuum that has been left behind where those attachments were. Remember, just because these specific attachments are gone doesn't mean ego is gone, right? So there's kind of like a vacuum there, but ego is still hanging out, so ego can fill the vacuum if we let it. So it seems like one of the things that, you know, ego really tries to push at us to fill that space when, as we're allowing more and more space through more and more detachments and more and more letting go of ego, ego tries to refill the space. One of the things it tries to refill it with is pride, or you could call it an exaggerated assessment of my awakening. What I feel like the stage that I'm at now is what I'm doing now is resting in and being with a willingness for great, great willingness beyond any willingness that I have had yet. And I have experienced what I perceived to be great willingness. Took me through a lot of forgiveness opportunities with the Holy Spirit instead of falling back on ego. But I feel like I'm at a stage now where I need more willingness than I have mustered to this date. And I don't know how long this stage will take. You know, the Course talks about the four or five stages of trust. And it mentions a stage that the teacher of God will get to, that it says it's something like it may take a very long time, you know, to complete. I don't remember the exact words, but it points out that we may sit in a particular stage for a very long time. And that is one of the more advanced stages. It's closer to the end instead of closer to the beginning. And when I say this, I'm not saying it as if it has to be this way. I'm not saying this as a belief. Because I think that's also a mistake to say, okay, so now this has to take a long time. It's not that. It's just an honesty, a willingness to see that I may not be completely ready. And that what would be helpful for me to do is to spend my time that is present, that is, you know, I'm here right now. So spend my time cultivating more readiness. That's what I can do. Srinazargadatta in number 313 again says, "Once you have seen that you are dreaming, you shall wake up. But you do not see, because you want the dream to continue. A day will come when you will long for the ending of the dream with all your heart and mind, and be willing to pay any price. The price will be dispassion and detachment, the loss of interest in the dream itself." So I'm learning that. I'm not there. It seems like a lie to say anything else. All right, let's look at number 313 in the journal. loss of interest in the world and loss of interest in thoughts about the world is the heartfelt decision that is made. This decision is key to awakening, because a mind interested in the world makes the world as if it is real. The decision is made, and now heart energy must be given to this decision through love and devotion. When love and devotion are given to the decision, they are not given to the world. This is the answer and the way, and it is the way of love. So you can see here that the decision, I have agreed within myself to lose interest in the world. And now I'm in the phase of loving that agreement, being devoted to that agreement, practicing that agreement, allowing that to flourish, because I am not yet to the point where I long for the ending of the dream with my whole heart and mind. Something in me needs to flourish. Something in me needs to cultivate to bring me to that stage. Right now, I still want air. I want the world to continue beyond 2012. But I have agreed to lose interest, even in air. I am willing to want awakening more than air. And when I say that, I feel my heart, so I know it's true. I know I'm not lying now when I say that I'm willing for that. I would be lying if I said I'm there. If I said right this moment, I want awakening more than air, that would be a lie. But if I say I am willing to want awakening more than air, that is a truth. And for me, it's very, very nice to be, as I said, self-honest. It feels wholesome to be self-honest. So loss of interest in the world and loss of interest in thoughts about the world is the heartfelt decision that is made. This decision is key to awakening, because a mind interested in the world makes the world as if it is real. The decision is made, and now heart energy must be given to this decision through love and devotion. When love and devotion are given to the decision, they are not given to the world. This is the answer and the way, and it is the way of love. All right, we have 5 minutes, so let's do one more. We can scroll down and click on number 314. Number 314 in the book, Srinazar Gadada Maharaj says, I do not need the world, nor am I in one. So there's no world to end in 2012 for Srinazar Gadada Maharaj. I do not need the world, nor am I in one. All right, number 314 in the journal. Who am I? Am I a woman in a world that is more influential than me? This has been the belief. Caught up in this belief, the need to control the world, to make it fit my way, has resulted in constant struggle. Even as the dreamer of the world, attachment to making the world my way is present. What is my way? Who am I? If I am that which is beyond the world, is there any need for the world at all? Just think about that one line. If I am that which is beyond the world, is there any need for the world at all? If I know myself as that beyond the world, does it matter if the world ends in 2012? If I know myself as that which is beyond the world, Does it matter if the Regina body has air? Of course not. If I am that which is beyond the world, is there any need for the world to be at all? Aren't I completely independent of any world appearance? Can the world evoke a struggle, a desire for control or suffering in me? Without belief or identification that attaches meaning to world appearances, can there be suffering? And the answer to all of these questions is no. If my realization is the realization that Sri Nisargadatta is expressing here, I do not need the world, nor am I in one. If my realization, if I identify with myself as that which is before even the dreamer of the dream, that which we call God, remember it says God is not aware of illusion, that which we call God, if I'm identified with that, if that is what I am, then what concern is the world to me? Now there is another concern that seems to arise that is often called compassion. That is compassion for the isness that does not yet know it is isness and therefore suffers from appearance. So a truly enlightened mind seems to have this compassion. Compassion for isness that does not know it is isness and is suffering from appearance. That is different than concern about the world. They're not the same thing. Lots of people think compassion and concern about the world are the same thing, but they are not. Compassion only wants to awaken you from your dream. Compassion wants you to know who you are. Wake up. See, there's nothing to suffer from. That's different than concern about the world. So these questions lead to inner contemplation with the heart that helps to build that readiness to long for the ending of the dream with all your heart and mind, being willing to pay any price, right, that we saw in the previous quote. By just really contemplating, if I am that which is beyond the world, is there any need for the world to be at all? By contemplating that, we build our readiness. Can the world evoke a struggle, a desire for control or suffering in me if I am that which is beyond the world? Without belief or identification that attaches meaning to the world, can there be suffering? By just contemplating these few questions, really looking at them with wisdom, we see that the true answer, true happiness, comes from complete realization of what we are, which is also complete detachment from the world. And just through the act of contemplation, we increase that readiness. We move ourselves closer to the point where we long for the ending of the dream with all our heart and all our mind. And I'm out of time. So thank you, everyone. It has been nice. And I'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye.